Talk given Friday, 18th April, 1975. Our considerations at our last meeting here marked the climax of all our group meetings these last 13 years and more. The great search as to what is meant by the state of communion, which is the ultimate fulfillment of man individually and as a species, was attempted to be presented in words as clearly as was possible. I tried to suggest what exactly is meant by living in the state of communion. What is the condition of communion? Which is the normal state for man. Now, we must inquire within ourselves just how much of all this through the years we have understood, we have tried to put into practice, we have realized as the simple fact of our own daily existence for ourselves. Let me put just a few basic points before everyone today, including myself. You know, I've always said one of the basic rules of the spiritual life is never to take leave of good sense. And time and again, we have considered the meaning of this statement. What is good sense? Who is the man who has good sense? And you may recall that the man who is purified in mind and heart and body, to use a Buddhist term, the Buddha constantly used, right conduct of body, speech, and thought. A man who is purified, who has ceased to grasp at anything and everything, who is mindful, he is the one who is capable of good sense. You remember, we have always emphasized not to equate good sense in the truly human sense, which means the truly religious sense, with common sense, as the world understands common sense. The world's common sense has proved itself from the beginning of time a failure. It is common in the derogatory sense, meaning of the word common, not in its true meaning, which is an exalted meaning. Simple good sense. How far have we been able to live with good sense, naturally and spontaneously exercising itself throughout our daily life? This is one question. Have we learned another great lesson? To be quiet, to be silent. If we are quiet and silent in the real sense of those words, there is an end to our self being obtrusive upon the world, making a noise in the world, adding to the cacophony, the dis-ease, the confusion and muddle and sorrow of the world, which includes us completely and absolutely. Have we learned this? It's a very, very important question, because the realization of the quietness and the silence really is the first and the most important gateway to the perfectly human life. We talk a great deal about self-knowledge. We make noisy, violent efforts to discover the truth about ourselves, as we say. We run off to lectures, we read books, we go to this psychologist or that, whoever he may be. So-and-so is a great teacher, so-and-so will help you, and so forth, in order to get self-knowledge. We hear torrents of words, and we read dozens of books by authorities and so forth. And we imagine that we are acquiring self-knowledge. Now note carefully, self-knowledge can never be acquired. Self-knowing is the actual state of awareness in the immediate living moment. You can't acquire awareness. Either you are aware or you are not aware. Just as either you are awake or you are in deep sleep. So you see, this acquisition of self-knowledge, or rather this pathetic hustle and bustle to acquire self-knowledge, is indicative of the passion to possess something which would be good for me. whatsoever activity is self-oriented, that activity can never produce self-knowledge, the state of awareness, alert awareness in the immediate moment. Moreover, self-knowledge can never be realized by treating the self as an object of observation out of relationship with everything around. One part of the mind becomes the sensor, the observer, and looks at the rest of what we call the self. But how are we looking? In the light of knowledge, understanding, wisdom, illumination, or in the darkness of our conditioned state? In the darkness of our acquired intellectualist criteria and standards of judgment and so on. Do we ever look at those criteria and standards of judgment? Every single one of them is self-oriented, and as such defeats self-knowledge in the true sense. It's very difficult to be awake to these things. We are not quiet, we are not silent. So we obtrude upon our world, which includes our own self. And by obtruding upon the world, we are obtrusive upon ourselves too, and hurtful to ourselves. We have to learn to let be. It's a tremendous lesson to learn, to let be. You know how often I have said, live by letting live. Not the commoner garden phrase, live and let live. There's a vast difference between the two, a complete difference. The human race, largely composed of subhumans, lives and let lives, or tries to. And see what the history of man is. On the national and international scale, and individually. Living and letting live is rooted in the separation between self and the not-self, everybody else included. But if you live by letting live, you find the relationship between what we regard as our own self, the subject, and all the rest as the object or objects, we find the relationship becoming truer and truer, more and more complete. And we will find that that relationship becomes more complete and truer, not in accordance with any preconception we make of what that relationship ought to be. This is our great difficulty always, because we are pleasure seekers. We say the relationship between my wife and myself, or my husband and myself, between me and this person or that situation or that thing or whatever it is, should be such and such. If I lay down conditions like that, then the truth of the situation will everlastingly elude me, because I have a blind spot at least, usually many, many blind spots, which prevent me from seeing the fact as it is. And why is this? Why does all this take place? Because I am not quiet. I'm a noisy fellow. We all know how little children, they can't bear not to be noticed. They all want to be noticed. Look at me. You know what a sulk they can get into if you don't notice them, and so forth. We are all like that. So, that is another question we must ask ourselves. To what extent have we realized what it means to be quiet and silent? This quietness and silence is the golden key to living the human life. And if I've said it once, I've said it times out of number, ad nauseam almost. The meaning of the word human, its actual derivation, from its root, its Sanskrit root of man, to create, the thought which is creative. Therefore it is not thought in our ordinary sense of the word thought, which is merely a pattern of words. Our thinking is a chattering process. The great scriptures of the world, all of them, without exception, have pointed to the thought of the Supreme, whatever that Supreme may be. The thought of the Supreme, the word of the Supreme, the mind of the Supreme, in action, brings forth all creation, cosmos, out of chaos. And the prefix hue means happy. Well done. You may say, if you like, perfect. The happy creator, that is man, the human creature. Are we happy creators? What sort of creation do we indulge in? There is the natural, inevitable, almost biological creation which the millions engage in. This is nature at work in order to preserve the species, quite right too. This is nature at work. But this is not creation in the fully human, which is actually the transcendent sense. This is procreation. Whatsoever activity brings about something which is the known, already known, which is true to type, is a procreation. True creation releases something which was not there before in time and space. That is creation. In our cultural creations, up to a point, we touch that transcendent height or depth, call it what you like. Only sometimes. But usually, it is a something produced which is true to type, which is recognizable. Where there is real creation, it is not recognizable by us using our senses and our logical intellect. It is something utterly new. It's a mystery, a wonder, a miracle. This is the original meaning of the word magic. Why aren't we happy creators? You know where and when such creation takes place? It takes place in that utterly awake, alert state which is an interval between two knowns. It is that transcendent void which is the unknown. And if you are awake and alert in that transcendent void, which is the unknown, creation takes place. Which here with the brain and the use of the senses is not known, simply because there is no standard, nothing like it before, with which to know. Afterwards, with the lapse of time and with the impress that that creative upsurge made on the whole psychophysical being, something emerges in the shape of concept, word, action, an artistic production or whatever it is, which is a photograph, an expression, something pushed out of that original creative activity. If you can understand this, you will understand why the great scriptures have always said that all existence, the entire manifested process, is a thought in the mind of God. It's a picture, God's imagination, Vishnu's dream, and so forth. Such phrases are used. The play of the divine, it is called, the Leela, the sport. But that creativeness, which is our birthright really, takes place only in the silence. Because when this, which we call myself or ourself, is speechless, then that creative power, the divine word, if you like, that magical spell, if you like, functions suddenly. And you know, if and when it does, and this is one of the profound meanings and states of yoga and the yogi, if and when it does, then there is a complete transformation within one's own being. Don't seek to know it. Don't seek to look at the results, because here on earth, as a mortal, I will look with the eyes of desire, which are blind eyes. I will look with the eyes that see with distortion because of the pleasure drive inherent in the whole living body. Always remember that wonderful myth. Psyche was forbidden to see Eros. As long as she did not see him, there was the divinity of love. One day she fell, lit the lamp, and a drop of hot oil fell upon Eros, the divine creative god. He woke up and went away, and Psyche was left grieving. It's a wonderful, wonderful myth. Go deeply into it. To want to know for myself is a self-oriented thing. It defeats wisdom. I'll get knowledge, yes. But what is that knowledge? A spinning out of cobwebs, of intellectual cobwebs. Not the power to see the truth as it is, which means to be that truth which you see. And that is wisdom. Being that which one sees. In mind and consciousness only, of course. Otherwise we'd find ourselves turned into chairs and sticks and stones and pianos and ugly things too. So you see the importance of silence, of quiet. But are we silent and quiet? Are we really mindful, watching the process that goes on here in the brain all the time that we are awake and a good deal of the time that we are asleep? If we watch very carefully, we will discover that what we thought, what we imagined to be our really sincere drive for living the religious life, for serving God, for loving man, being helpful and kind, and all the rest of the talk, we will discover that all that is just a superficial noise, a going through the motions. The truly holy state is invisible. the sanctum sanctorum is never approached by any man. That Adaitam is in darkness. It's not visible. It's not made visible. We may storm the ramparts of heaven, but we can't ravish the origin of all transcendence. Heaven is of our own making, of our own conceiving, and we can storm the ramparts of heaven. You see the deep significances of this living of the religious life. Such are the questions, these are just some of the simple questions we must ask. And see if we live by them. It is the most difficult thing in the world to be free of selfness. If there is a self at all in manifestation, it seems utterly impossible that it can be utterly free of selfness. It is a self to start with. So you see, it is as if in every single cell of our round about 15 billion cells that make up our bodies, it's ingrained in every one of them to be concerned with itself. This is why this tremendous natural force, this sheer titanic electrochemistry of the living organism coming to consciousness makes us self-oriented in order that the self may be preserved. This clamor of the living self, of all the cells composing the organism. This clamor is the thing that prevents us in mind and consciousness from being quiet. With modern science, we have all acquired knowledge, wonderful knowledge about all these billions of cells and how they work and this, that and the other, and we think, we are getting a lot of self-knowledge. Are we? In the early days we said the body is made of solids like bones, liquids like blood and so forth, and we were content with saying that we were made up of fire, air, earth, water, and a mysterious something called ether. I use the English word ether for akasha, which they used in India. You find these things in the Greek philosophers, Lucretius and Democritus and the whole lot of them, the Romans too, you see. They all talked in these terms. They all talked also of this mysterious something, the correspondent of the Indian Akasha, the fifth, which no one knows. Fire, air, earth, water, we knew. They talked in those terms. Today, looking at them, we say, well, of course, they didn't know. They didn't have modern science to discover in greater detail. We have discovered all these things in greater detail. And in a manner which gives us, usually, unfortunately, power over these elements. And we always misuse power. We have discovered all that. But has that been a contributory cause to the release of true humans on the face of this globe? Perfected holy ones. This is something which needs deep consideration. What is it that makes a man a man? Fine clothes, good houses, the latest plumbing, social services, which because of their self-orientation, because of their subservience to the greed of man, are degenerating human beings in large numbers. It's a curious thing, isn't it? But the religious life means that we are free from all these ills. Because we become fully alive to the root ill, this isolative self-consciousness, which preserves us in the state of disunity with the world in which we live. The world and I, two separate things. You know these things. You know all these things which I talk about. I talk about them. You talk about them. To what extent have we so realized the truth of it all in inner consciousness that we are transformed beings? This is the thing. Years we have met together, met in love, in fellowship, heart to heart, mind to mind. We need not question that. That is a simple fact. But to what extent has the light of transcendence shone out as a new star in the firmament of total existence through each one of us? This is the point. And if not, why not? You know how in this school of Pythagoras, the novices were acousticoi for 2 years, listeners. They kept their mouths shut. They had to keep their mouths shut. How many of us are capable of even that? Shall we lay down a rule? As they say on TV or radio, starting now, for 2 years. No words. As the starting discipline. No words spoken aloud. You try it for 1 day. Just 1 day. And during that day, see what a terrific clamor will go on here in the brain silently. It will intensify because the audible sounds out of us have ceased. Therefore, all that energy will go into the inaudible noise that we make. And watch that noise. It's the devil's own clamor. All the reactions of fear, of anger, of annoyance, of greed, of grasping, all the ills are there. And if one can do it for a whole day, that is to say, be mindful of it. I mean, don't just force yourself to go into a stupor and go deaf throughout the day. No, listen to all that clamor. And then that will shake up our ideas about knowing ourselves. We think we know ourselves, but we don't. Listen to the language we use inside ourselves. Nice, cultured, urbane, suave, persuasive, gentle, loving, or, and I'm afraid the or will completely outweigh the other scale. You know how the Buddha, in propounding the 5 principal precepts, paid the greatest attention to the one which deals with speech. All 5 precepts take about 25 lines in print, of which 16 go to the question of speech. How important speech is. It's not enough to know doctrines, to discover in verbal statement, in conceptual form, the way to live the good life. The way to live the good life is by living it. I'm quoting a lot from the Buddha tonight, but there we are. When one of his greatest disciples, Subhuti, was talking to him, the Buddha said, just enlightenment is the path. Just the path is enlightenment. The being, the doing, the perceiving, the awakening, they are all simultaneous. One integrated whole. Have we awakened to the feeling, at least, of this integrated wholeness in all these years? Because if you really have awakened to it, even in odd moments, we can easily see how it has transformed life. not necessarily just the outward shape of events of our life, but the inner stance towards life as a whole. This is where real love and wisdom come in. There is neither acceptance because we like this, that, or the other, or approve of it, nor is there any rejection of this, that, or the other because it hurts us or we disapprove of it. These are the ways by which we can find out, do we really live the religious life? And in that finding out, you will come across moments of light, sheer light and beauty and an unspeakable quiet, intensely quiet happiness. When the real thing is there. And it will suffuse your whole being and your environment. You know what the man of the world will say if he hears this? The intelligent, serious, sincere man of the world will say, oh, this is airy-fairy nonsense. This is idealism gone mad. What about Vietnam? What about this, that, and the other? Yes, what about them? Is the man of the world, with his so-called hard-headed practical concern for these things, is he the least bit able to alter the fact of Vietnam, or alter the fact of evil in the world throughout the ages? He never has done anything. Who indeed has been responsible, or who are those few who have been responsible for generating new rhythms of life which have slowly but surely change the shape of some things in the world for the better? Only the perfected holy ones, the only practical ones in the world. This is a fact of history. Compassion, understanding, unselfedness, beauty. These are the powers. These are the objective realities. Not subjective idealisms. So, think on these things. And see what change, which is change along the lines of growth, can be released from now on.